popular advertising trend that marketers have relied on for years is the ability to leverage location data. Its longstanding prevalence is no surprise. Location is often at the heart of reaching a consumer at the right place and time. But things have been changing rapidly. With privacy concerns mounting and increased scrutiny from regulators, mobile location data, how it's collected, and how it can be used by advertisers is really hard to keep track of. Hey everyone, I'm Noor Nasir, Senior Director of Media Innovations and Technology at Centro and host of AdTech Unfiltered. In this episode, we talk with Lawrence Chan, EVP of Data Ecosystems at location intelligence company Cubic. He shares some fantastic need-to-know information on what advertisers should be keeping a pulse on to make the absolute most of location data today. Our episode on mobile location and privacy starts right now. Lawrence, thanks so much for joining us today to chat about the state of mobile location, privacy, and considerations for advertisers.
Absolutely, and thank you for inviting me. Really, really, really appreciate it. It's always nice to see your face.
Awesome. So let's start out with giving some background on who you are and what you do for Cubic.
Sure. So I'm the EVP of our data ecosystem, which is a culmination of both biz dev as well as data collection / data acquisition. So I'm responsible for all the data that comes into Cubic. So it could be location data, but it could be other types of data, like some things that we recently did are Inscape, where we took in linear TV data from a viewing perspective. We've taken in demographic data to obviously build better reporting. So anything that comes into Cubic. And then finally, understanding on the other side, the outside, you know, when it goes out, what that looks like, what markets we should engage in, what clients we have, what partnerships we need, so that we can maximize the data that's coming to Cubic into our products, into our partnerships, and basically anything and everything, so we can maximize every dollar we spend, but also the utilization of it.
I think it's an exciting position for you to be in because there is not just an obsession with data holistically, but there's also an obsession with mobile location data. So I think we found the perfect guest to speak to the topic. So I will ask you this seemingly obvious question, which may not be so obvious. Why do marketers and advertisers love mobile location data so much?
I'm going to segment that question. So the previous applications for a marketer for mobile location was simple, right? You wanted to get people, and the whole rhetoric behind location data was you wanted to get people that were close to your venue or exhibited certain behaviors, and you wanted to drive them to your stores, create value there, or understand how, you know, from a digital perspective, where they would either look at their phones or somewhere else when they were close to something and actually spawn some type of action. There's no way to attribute it. There was no way to do anything with it. But the idea of having, you know, people close to McDonald's being given a McDonald's advertising ad is probably a good thing, right? It was kind of the rhetoric behind it. It's evolved a lot since then. And you know, the idea of driving that last mile sale through a mobile location ad, through really good targeting around that location, has really kind of like, it's diminished over time. It's obviously still good to understand the people within a market that can go to your store or go to transact. But for the most part, that has really taken a seat back compared to everything else that we're doing with location today. And I think why marketers really, really need to be excited, not only about what's current day today, but also in the future. So today, the reason people should be excited about mobile location data is that it's finally offering a bridge between the online and offline world. The sophistication of the data is a lot better than it was before. And I'm sure we'll get into a lot of the data analytics and how and what data actually means when it comes to mobile location data later on here. But for the most part, the efficacy has basically weeded out the good location data and the bad location data and what can be used and what can't be used and you know what use cases you have, really bring excitement to a place where you're no longer testing and learning. You kind of know, you know, what the outcomes may be. And I think that's a really exciting place to be. And in the future, it's really taking a lot of the analytics and things that we've done that we're testing location data on and really taking it back to things like TV and out of home and other places where there was no bridge. You know, out of home specifically is a great example of that. Without mobile location data, all the crazy things that we're doing in digital out of home, programmatic out of home actually can't happen. because you need that bridge between kind of what's happening on the screen and where people are. And mobile location data is really the only way to get that done. And so there's a lot of new companies, as well as old companies, kind of tackling that problem. And I think we're going to see just overall more and more of that where you know, it's developing methodology and then testing methodology and finally utilizing it at scale. And I think that's we're pretty much closer to the last step of that, which is scaling everything out.
To your point, I definitely want to get into analytics and attribution and all the things associated with that, because I know a lot of exciting things are happening from a mobile location and just location standpoint. But I wanted to take a step back once more and talk about just the baseline concept of online versus offline data. And I think one of the ways that people segment it most often is thinking about third-party cookie data and then also offline data again. And I'm saying offline, but incidentally, obviously, we get mobile location data online, just like the differences in the ways people perceive that cookie data versus location data.
It's a really interesting kind of topic in general. So the idea of offline data, and we do collect all of it digitally for the most part, whether transactional data, you know, at point of sale, or whether or not it's obviously through our devices for mobile location. The offline data component of life really permeates throughout practically every consumer, right? Like we know based on Census Bureau and other types of data sets where still 80 to 90 something percent of 92% of commerce still happens in person in stores. And you know, because of that, you know, despite the crazy fallout of retail and all these other theories about what happened in the United States with kind of the retailers, no matter what, the money's still being spent there, right? There's 1,000 other factors that can lead to the fall of a retailer, but when you're looking at the data itself, the offline data is specifically tailored to capture those specific incidents and moments in life when you go out to a store and like there's a Target right below us right now and you go buy something, right? And those are where that kind of data asset hasn't really been fully integrated into the marketing stack or ad tech stack or whatever else. We're definitely starting to see a move to actually integrate those into many stacks beyond just advertising. When it comes down to online data, I feel like, you know, it's at a really good state. All the data is there. You know, we have really great targeting parameters. Just looking at kind of D2C brands and then kind of myself and as a focus group of one, the ability to utilize my parameters and search histories and kind of interest to target me ads is honestly really good. And I think we still need to get there with the offline piece. And you know, the thing that I've noticed for myself, and maybe no one else in the world will agree with me on this, but for myself, I've bought so much random stuff off Instagram, but it's because like most of it's tailored to me. And it's stuff that more than likely I was searching for in some way, shape, or form anyway. And I've gotten, actually, I'd say better products out of it. So I think from a pure kind of online perspective, we're pretty far along there. And I think the idea is to hopefully bring offline as close to online as you possibly can.
And I should correct myself in not using the term offline data. It's really offline behavior. So it's offline behavior versus online behavior. But so many of your points definitely do apply. So I think the turning point from what you just said as far as the maturity of the online data space and now the offline behavior information that we're also capturing from a location perspective. The challenge is that there are all of these new privacy regulations that are coming into today's marketplace and impacting advertisers and marketers. We all, marketers and advertisers, I mean, want this hyper-specific data, and now regulative bodies are saying no more, you're not informing the consumers as they should be notified, and tides are going to turn. So how has that impacted the mobile location space?
Oddly enough, I think the mobile location space, and we can actually thank a lot of the agencies and brands out there that have utilized mobile location data in the past, the scrutiny under location data was actually really heavy, I'd say, for the past 3 years. And that forced a lot of companies to re-examine how they got data and how they get data to utilize with their products and targeting and analytics and attribution. And so the reason I'm saying that is it's the evolution of, I think we've known each other for about 4 or 5 years at this point.
At least.
Oh yeah, Lease. It was another company. and as I kind of look at that, you know, the first RFIs or RFPs that I got, even from you, were much more fundamental, right? It's like, do you have mobile location data? Yes, right. And then scrutiny over time, it became really, really quick, where they were asking about things like where the data came from. Do you have things like dwell time? You know, is it tied to this? Is it tied to that? And do you have permissions? And you know, what's your security protocol? What's kind of interesting is I'd say like about a quarter of the RFPs that we see running through our company.
Yeah.
Actually have security attached to it. So it's no longer just like, you know, here you go, here's an RFP, I want to understand, you know, your pricing and things like that, how you store the data, what your deletion policies are, what your EULA looks like, all that type of stuff makes a huge difference in terms of whether or not you get picked as a partner. And so
you are saying, Lawrence, that you are routinely getting this whole smorgasbord of questions.
Oh, 100%, right? And so, you know, the breadth of what location data is, I think even ahead of kind of the regulatory bodies, was moving that direction anyway. The big difference, obviously, is because there is regulatory bodies. So beyond kind of the EU and the US and it's all different state legislatures, you even have kind of IAB and MMA and the rest of those guys tackling very, very similar things when it comes to not just mobile location data, but just kind of data in general. And understanding things like data provenance, which is something that's probably a term that most people have never heard of, right? And it's because it's new. You know, consent management is something that people have heard of, but data provenance is a step beyond that, right? It's understanding where your data came from and how we got there and whether or not people had consent, either having it, deleting it, passing it on, whatever else. And so all these kind of things kind of happen at the same time. And so as I'm looking at fully answer out the question, and like I want to synthesize this because I could literally talk about this for about 6 hours.
Sure.
You know, when it comes down to regulatory bodies, the privacy element is obviously at the forefront of many, many legislative bills, really top of mind for almost anyone utilizing data in general. When it comes down to location data, there's obviously high scrutiny there, and for good reason, right? You know, the idea that, you know, there's data about where I'm going and how I got there and things like that is, you know, for the average consumer, regardless of whether or not it's anonymized and private and you know, things that you know, honestly, you have no idea who's doing it, becomes super important. But I think, you know, it's about putting the right safeguards in place from a regulatory perspective, but also from your own industry perspective. There was a New York Times article about 6 months back, that had a very scathing, but also hope for the location industry at large. And the reporter did an amazing job in terms of the research that she did. And ultimately, you know, there are good actors in the space where privacy is important. Because privacy is important, they act in a certain way. I mean, one of the apps that was called out specifically there, you know, was basically like a industry standard that should have happened because they spelled out exactly what was going to happen to the data, right? Like who's gonna get the data is put out in front of the consumer. Where it's going, what it's used for is put out in front of the consumer. And so, you know, before you even opt into it, there's a clear understanding of not just the fact that, hey, I'm collecting data, but this is what it's being used for. And that consumer has at that point a choice to make. And I feel like that choice, that informed consent or however, you know, whatever technical privacy term you want to put around it, it's starting to come to fruition across the board. And I feel like people that are good actors will continue working in that aspect, despite the fact that you might drop daily active user count or monthly active user count for either your app or your publisher, your publication, whatever that ends up being. You know, the regulatory bodies are going to definitely step in to make sure that things like this happen. But I feel like if you have the right people in place and you have the right mindset as a company, I think a lot of this becomes a lot less inappropriate over time. And the other thing is, this is actually a lot to unpack, but the data provenance piece is something I kind of really want to touch closely on. There's a lot of, and this is not just mobile location data, but I think it's even more so in mobile location. Data brokers and data aggregators have existed for a long time. You know, the idea of taking different data sets from different places, putting in one place, and then kind of reselling it to people. Things like demographic data, and if you're a broker for demographic data, honestly, it's not that sensitive. Most of the time it's anonymized data. And so knowing the fact that I'm a male that's between 25 and 34, it doesn't change every 9, you know, it only changes every 9 years. There's really nothing that you can really glean from it besides those two data points. But then when you're looking at location, things are dynamic, right? You know, what I'm doing day in, day out, where I'm traveling to, all that type of stuff, that gets kind of put into this bucket. And so the scrutiny around consent, data provenance, you know, whether or not someone has a right to even collect that data and share it are super important. Things like data leakage happen a lot. And so when you're thinking about where the permissions stand to gather, collect, and transmit data, it's really all over the place. And it's really up to kind of the brands and agencies to figure out what questions to ask. And that I think this is why we're starting to see all these security questionnaires come out along with RFPs, because if you don't do that, you're not actually protecting yourself against bad actors. And it's not readily apparent who the bad actors are until you dig in a little further, because I'd argue that there's probably some companies out there that have actually no idea where the data came from, even though they're selling it.
Right.
And that's scary, right? And so I think working with people that you can trust obviously is super important, but not only can trust, but they can actually help you backtrack where everything came from, and that's where the provenance piece kind of comes in. And so another story for another time, but that's where like things like the emergence of blockchain and having public ledgers and things like that really hopefully will drive differences in the future. But I think we're still far off from that being a reality at scale, at least.
And I think we're going to come back to some of those points that you just mentioned as well. But to speak to one point you mentioned a little bit earlier, I think one of the issues as far as the collection of mobile location data in apps or however it's being collected, we as consumers were just coming to this place, and admittedly, even I was saying this, you've downloaded the app and now there are all these stipulations that just come with doing that download and choosing to use it, and they are collecting your mobile location data. If you want to know exactly how they're doing it, don't have an answer for you, don't have clarification for you, but you've opted in, and what opted in entails, couldn't tell you.
100%.
So I do think that times are changing. And I was just reading an article and looking at a quote right now as it relates to the release of iOS 13 and how it's been much more privacy focused in its features. And it's actually highlighting the nuances of what it is that you are giving permission for, and then seeing a visualization of how that's being collected. And that visualization really creates more of a sensitivity of this is my life and you are tracking that.
Yep.
Clearly there's going to be an impact on how much data is going to be collected. I know you mentioned, you know, monthly active user count or daily active user count. Do we think there's going to be a sudden diminishment in the quality and the refinement of the data that can be collected? And is that going to be something that is going to affect the quality of the audiences we can act against?
The quality is one thing, and then kind of the scale is a completely other. I don't think the quality on a mobile advertising ID level or identifier level is going to change very much. The people that are comfortable with their data being shared, because like I said, if you look at iOS 13 and the command prompts, I actually have a whole deck on this, the command prompts really give everything back to the consumer to make these choices, not just once, but several times. When I first downloaded, I think it was iOS 12 that introduced a lot of the elements that you're actually about to see in iOS 13, it kept asking me if I was okay sharing data a second time with the same app. And oddly enough, this is not because I work in the location space, but as a consumer, like if I gave you permission already, maybe it's because I'm an informed consumer, but if I gave you permission already, I definitely do not want to be asked again. And that was really, really bothering me, when I first downloaded the iOS 12, because I kept getting these prompts about like whether or not I wanted to share my location data. And I was like, I already did it like 2 days ago. I don't understand why. And you have to do it for every single app. But I think for everybody else and or people who are less informed, I think it's actually a really great thing. But when it comes down to the data quality, I don't think that changes very much. The algorithms that run when to collect data, how to collect data, you know, decrease battery drain, all that type of stuff, that's going to be relatively the same throughout. But I think the main difference is quality data that's usable is going to be much harder to come by. And so the scale across the board, and you specifically asked about audience targeting, there's some things that are just like, that I just don't personally understand about kind of like how location data was being utilized still today, right? Which is, you know, I logged into a DSP before, and, you know, I obviously am looking at what our competitors are doing, what I'm doing, and what the scales look like. And I remember like this pulling this up with one of our partners, and I was looking at the Volvo segment, and I don't remember the exact number, so I'm just going to make it up. But you know, I think it was 20 or 30 million targetable IDs in the Volvo segment. And I think the description was like in the last 30 days. I just have a really hard time believing 10% of the population of the U.S. is going to a Volvo dealership. You know, just in general. Like, forget,
sure.
You know, like, it, you know, it's stuff like that. I know it's not exactly corollary, and there's a lot of holes in what I'm stating. But the idea of that going away, I think, is a good thing.
Right. There's clearly, beyond bad actors, there's bad data that's being collected, right? We don't think that the volume of people in that segment is clearly wildly exaggerated. So
exactly. And so as less of that data is available, the algorithms that pick up whether or not someone went to a Volvo dealership can't pick it up anymore. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. It's not great for an audience business, but I think from a analytics perspective, from a kind of like pure data form perspective and how to look at the data, it becomes much cleaner overall. So I'd say that the people that opt in and understand the opt-in implications and things like that, like the data quality for them is going to be exactly the same. But for everybody else, it's going to clean up a lot of the remnant or bad actors or whatever, you know, whatever you want to call them. A lot of there's bad data out there. And I think to your point, it's something that's not bad, but I think there will be a kind of rejiggering of what standard is. And I actually can't wait for that to happen. So
I want to go back to something you said a little earlier, Lawrence, in reference to your use of iOS 12 or of being asked repeatedly to share your location and how that actually is maybe annoying for you. And I know the same thing that people do with app refreshes when there are updates to apps, they just put auto refresh on them. And I'm wondering if these phone manufacturers are going to come to that conclusion themselves that after people have given that initial permission, maybe they don't want to be asked repeatedly. So I say all that to ask you this question. When it comes down to mobile location, what do you think customers want? Not that you're a representation of every mobile phone user right out there, but what's kind of your sensibility as somebody who's selling location data?
So customers, like our type of customers?
You're right. I should restate that. Consumers, just users of mobile phones.
Got it. This is actually going back to that New York Times article that I'm referencing. I wish I remember the author's
I was
name.
Reading that earlier today.
That's funny. That was pinned onto the New York Times Twitter feed for several days. And you know, I was reading it and I was reading the comments and there were like several comments that were similar to this, and it's like, in other news, water's wet. And so I think like those types of people were actually a lot more vocal than the people that like really had disdain against it. I think taking from that regard, I'd say that most consumers don't necessarily care as much about, I don't think they care as much as long as they get the content and the things that they're used to getting for free. And I think that's important. Most consumers probably don't realize the fact, you know, data and advertising and all this stuff is what allows them to get things for free. I think that's number one. But I think as a consumer, my expectation or the general expectation isn't necessarily about consent or privacy or anything like that. They want to make sure that, you know, the data that's being collected in some way, shape, or form isn't being used against them, right? I think that's the biggest fear of anything. It's not whether or not I get better targeted ads, right? Like, if I get them, awesome. If not, not a big deal. But if the data is being used against me, that's a very different situation. And this is what I mean in terms of like bad actors and not knowing where data comes from. And secondly, I think control or understanding the data, where the data came from, how it got captured is important. So because of GDPR and a bunch of kind of other laws that are out there, almost every data company needs to abide by this and have ways to understand data requests for their data, right? So if a consumer comes in and goes like, hey, Cubic, I want to know what you're collecting on me. Cubic has the obligation legally to give them that data. And so, you know, it stinks from a production perspective, but you have to build systems that allow for that to happen. But ultimately, it's a great thing for the consumer. So I can't share the exact stats, but basically, a lot of people ask for their data. Very few actually erase it. And data erasure is a completely separate thing where they want it wiped from your data systems and anyone else's data systems that you work with. And so, you know, just kind of looking at that from a data side, I just think consumers just want to know, as opposed to worried about implications of the usage if it's not malicious. You know, it's a completely different thing when their credit card numbers are stolen. And I think, you know, when you're thinking privacy, location and all that stuff kind of like combines it all together because it's personal information or personal data. But when it comes down to like whether or not you spotted me at a McDonald's, anonymized, and most of the products that the most location players make are completely and utterly aggregated. I really don't think the fallout's that heavy. With that said, I think most consumers are also like uneducated about what's happening on their phone, even for me, like when it was re-asking me for my prompts on like whether or not I was willing to always share location data, I had no idea why it kept asking me. I thought I messed up and like fudged up and like I didn't press the right thing. But I did press the right thing. It was just a new command prompt. And so I think consumers like want to know what they're opting in for. And so like screens that show you like and explicitly tell you that it's not a 40-page legal document, 2 to 3 paragraphs of like this is what we're doing with the data and this is how we keep the app free, is really all that's needed. And if they decide at that point, the operating system now forces them to decide several times. But I think that even that one time or that consent, that really honestly informed consent is super important. But I don't think that the usage where it's generic, so going back to the cookie world, is good. If you go to the EU, at any given point, any website you go to asks you if you're okay utilizing cookies. And I feel like that language is so generic at this point that it's not specific to the app. It doesn't show you the value proposition of why. You know, it's a good example of that is a weather app more than likely wants you to share data so that it knows where you are so it can give you the weather. And I think that's really important, being able to spell that out and say, like, this is what we utilize the data for, and we also pass it on to third parties like Cubic or anybody else, and they utilize it for this, are really important screens to have in front of the consumer. And if they have opt-out mechanisms, if they have things like that, I think that's the most important part. I don't think the system re-prompting me 6 times and whether or not I still want to share my location data for this specific app is what the average consumer probably wants.
And I imagine that is just the growing pains that are occurring at this time as they try to figure out what's the right middle ground that we need to hit in terms of giving people access to information but not asking them again and again and again to a point that it's a nuisance. I think for myself and maybe a lot of other people feel the same way, is that it goes back to one of the things you said. People want to understand the origin of the data collection. Where and why did you collect that information? And then also to your point, understanding that there was a transactional element and that there's transparency around that transaction, that yes, I wanted the weather and therefore you collected my data, or I am wanting this filter associated with this location, therefore you're collecting my data. And these are all the circumstances in which it's going to happen. If I am using some gaming app where location is of no relevance, what and why and how are you collecting that location data? And for there to be no information around that, what is the quality of that location data and why are you collecting it? I agree. I think that moving forward, we're going to see a benefit both from the perspective of the consumer and for hopefully the advertiser as well. So I think in so many ways you did already just address what you think customers want and that advertisers will also be the beneficiaries of this. We've been talking about location data privacy for a long time now. What do you think is going to take place across the industry now as far as standard practices for mobile location?
The standard practice, I think, moving forward and the segmentation of the different types of location data becomes super important. Right now, there's really 2 or 3 types of location data that's being utilized because it's scalable, it's accurate. The bid stream is still utilized pretty drastically. So if people don't know, the bid stream is location data garnered from location from your devices when an ad call is being created. A lot of apps that have access to location will have better data when it comes down to RTB-based systems or real-time bidding systems. And that's where most people get their scale from. There's lots of it out there. Anytime you see an ad, there's a chance that you're creating location data and being utilized there. It's still necessary for scale purposes. I'd say that it's not bad data to utilize for audience targeting, just because, in my opinion, I think the idea that location data is all treated the same for its different use cases is a remnant of the past. Different use cases will have very different needs when it comes down to location data. So audience is a good example. Most marketers, if they were to launch a campaign targeting extremely granular parameters, are going to be sorely disappointed because they might have had $1 million budget to hit and they spent $10. And the reason for that is because as soon as you start utilizing more and more kind of accurate data or dense data when it comes down to location, the scale just becomes smaller and smaller, right? So it's a matter of a numbers game. And so I would say for most marketers, having less accurate data but lots of it, becomes super important for audiences because, you know, I can film an ad campaign, I'm hitting people that somewhat exhibit the behavior and have a chance to kind of exhibit the actions that I want them to exhibit. But then when it comes down to other things where analytics are important or attribution is important, really, really dense amounts of information matter a lot more, right? So you don't need the scale that you would have for audiences because the idea is to get as accurate of a read of a certain either campaign or behavior of a certain subset of users. And understanding that is also super important. But the use of location data there is very different. And the use of that location data is if I can get more information about a singular group of users and, you know, understand them really, really well, my ability to extrapolate that into analytics and attribution become a lot better because the margin of error and things like that don't need to factor in. And so it's definitely this kind of dance, right? You still need enough scale to make it meaningful. I mean, like, you know, having a panel of five people to judge your entire ad campaign on or you know, your marketing campaign on, probably not enough, right? Or if you only see 50 visits and you spent 7 million impressions to do something, probably not enough. But there's definitely a balance there, and I think the striation of location data into its kind of different sources and what's meaningful for the types of applications it has becomes super important. And I think the last step in a lot of this, and this is kind of going beyond location data, so kind of looking into the future a little bit, is being able to bridge a lot of the location data back into better truth sets. And truth sets are first-party based data in some way, shape, or form. So whether or not it's a Home Depot, you know, utilizing location data to understand this is my funnel. You know, I spent X amount of dollars. I know I exposed this amount of users, which means that led to this amount of visits. And based on my first-party numbers, you know, there's a correlation of 0.7 to my transactional data. So I'm converting a lot of them, which is amazing. So understanding that full funnel is important, but I think the data systems and everything in place, and even honestly the privacy laws and like what I can do with first party data versus not first party data and the willingness to share data is all kind of mixed into there. So I think that the future of location data is relatively about use cases rather than kind of the old rhetoric of, hey, do you have it? Yes, awesome. Or no, I don't have it, bad. You know, all these culminated with privacy and where it came from and with data provenance all intersect at some point. And I think that that's really where it kind of comes out to be. And the other applications of location data in the future, I think, are going to be a lot more pervasive. I think like both marketing and advertising has been able to utilize location very well, considering how nascent of a data asset it is. You know, demographic data has been around for a very, very long time, right? And so it's been around since the first person was born. But understanding that and kind of moving forward, the ability to bridge location data into other places is important. And you know, the ability to understand, actually a good example is out of home. It's not exactly that in terms of what I'm trying to get at, but out of home is a very traditional industry with hundreds of media owners out there, you know, with billboards, just putting up stuff, right? And that's really all it's been, and it's been like that for a long time. And the next iteration of that is being really much more sophisticated with the location data for things like real estate planning. You know, the ability to understand, like, predict where people are moving to and how they're going to get there and where migration patterns look like and all that type of stuff become really, really interesting. Actually, a good... I know there's a lot of examples, but kind of moving into an application of that, Cubic has something called the Data for Good program, and the ability for what it is, it's an ability for universities and nonprofits to utilize the data for free, right? And so they try to make real world impacts utilizing that amongst other, you know, 10,000 other tools that academics might utilize to understand things like disaster relief and other things. And so I think the very kind of underpinnings of a commercial usage of location are still spreading out. You know, like I said, ad tech and martech have been kind of the forefront of that. It can permeate into daily life a lot more just in general. And I think the usage of that in a lot of these data for good type projects or kind of nonprofit-based projects are a good iteration of where location data can go from a usage perspective. And I think it's important.
I want to go back to something you brought up way earlier, which was blockchain. For folks on the phone who may be less familiar because they hear blockchain, but they're almost using it in an ironic pop culture-y way, can you give us a definition of what blockchain is? Can you share how blockchain is being utilized to meet privacy standards?
Yes. All right, so the first thing with blockchain, I'm going to actually give everyone a visual instead of kind of just trying to describe the technology. So blockchain is basically, if you were to look at an accountant's ledger, you have this big book, it's got a lot of lines, lots of pages, but every single thing that happens, the accountant will put in, right? They'll write in the date, they'll write in the aspect, they'll write in the time. And that's honestly what blockchain is. It's just this ledger that kind of goes in over and over on anything that's happening for any specific subject, right? So you can have a blockchain that's focused on how many people pass by over here on the street. You can have a blockchain for how many trucks are passing by any given location and what they're carrying, right? So every single waypoint blockchain is utilized pretty substantially in supply chain, where if a truck stops here, what's on that truck, that's going to be put into the blockchain. And so if there's anything stolen into the next one, they actually have an ability to look at where things were at any given point. And the main difference between kind of blockchain and kind of the ledger, that the accountant's ledger that I was talking about, is that it's digital, it's public, so anyone can access it. And also it's immutable, which basically means that no one can fudge it up. So there's no one that can go back to it and like put white out on the accountant's ledger and just kind of change things, right? The reason why blockchain exists is to put something out there that that no one can change, and anything that's visible once will be visible to everybody. And that's really the power of the technology, and the power of the technology to like kind of process that is actually relatively intensive. And so, the idea is relatively simple, but the actual technology behind it to make it immutable with heavy encryption and things like that that's kind of one of the major challenges in terms of its usage in modern day society. But ultimately, it's just that. We know that something happened, I'm going to put it over here. I know that another thing happened, I'm going to put it over here. And if someone tries to erase it, it's impossible. And that's ultimately it. When it comes down to the uses of blockchain for privacy aspects, there's really several things that can happen. I'm going to kind of take this back into ad tech just because I feel like it's the most relevant for this audience.
Sure.
The idea of utilizing for privacy in general is exactly what I just described, right? Which is if you have a record of consent, right, and someone did something and said yes, that's amazing. I didn't actually have that before, but now it's recorded somewhere that someone can actually go back to and understand whether or not that actually happened and took place. And the reason it's immutable is even the website that collected it or the app that collected it, they actually can't go back and fudge it. You know what I mean? So once it's up there, it's up there. You can't just go back to your database and delete the database. But that's what it's being utilized for a privacy perspective in general. That's really honestly capturing consent and understanding consumers and where they are. But when it comes down to ad tech and martech and applications of blockchain, I think there's really two sides to it. So there's the first side, which is the consent management piece, which is what I just described. There's a data provenance piece, which is being able to actually go backward. Hypothetically, your data company one, and I'm data company two. Data company one passes me information. Data company two, which is me, I do something with it to create value, right? And then all of a sudden, I sell it to DSP two, DSP one, and then DSP one activates an audience from it. And so, what's interesting is that's something that happens day in, day out, right? We know that happens day in, day out. But to track it back is nearly impossible, because that last step, when you're thinking about it, if I ran a data segment against an RTB system, how many data systems it goes past within a millisecond? It's like literally hundreds. And so understanding things like that becomes super important. And so, once that consumer finally gets an ad, there's one person that won that bid or one company that won that bid. And then understanding that and putting that onto a blockchain and kind of really being able to go backwards from there and saying that, hey, this is an audience that actually had consent to be utilized is actually something really powerful. It's not something we've been able to do before. And like I said, it's still very nascent in terms of the technological level or the technological layer. But it's possible today, right? Which is being able to track back that data provenance and also have it be completely immutable. So the ramifications for that from a privacy perspective are really simple. Let's just say I got an ad over here from DSP1. And I backtrack that, and all of a sudden, I find out that where the data originated from, the user never gave consent, and that's not okay. And so, that entire chain needs to be notified of what happened and why, and then potentially erasing data that's associated to it. So there's a lot of use cases for it within AdTech and MarTech, but I think more than anything, it's a way to help consumers understand and take back some of the random things that are happening to their data that they wouldn't know about. The other applications of it could be, let's just say data company two like and your data company one, like I'm constantly just checking through a blockchain whether or not you're gathering consent because you need to write into the blockchain. And so as that happens, I'm like, I don't want this because the blockchain says that's not something I'm supposed to have. The net of it is the technology is nascent. There's a lot of use cases. And the ultimate goal, I think, across the board is finding ways to make advertising and its use cases, where the data came from, how it was utilized, how it was processed, what eventually the end user was or end buyer was, all transparent to consumers. And I think that that's ultimately what the marketers want as well, right? They definitely don't want to be buying data where there was no consent, but that's very, very highly possible today because there's no way to check it.
In your opinion, do you see blockchain becoming a standard practice that needs to be utilized across the industry, or do you think this is just one of multiple ways of having a system of checks and balances when it comes to mobile location data?
I definitely think it's a latter. I think one of the biggest things that irks me, as I was going through a lot of the initial understandings and learnings about blockchain, is people feel like it's a solution. Blockchain is not a solution for anything. Blockchain is a tool. And so if we can build tools that are good, if not better than blockchain, then we're going to do that, right? So, but right now it's a technology that's open source that people can utilize for immutable public ledgers. And so if there's a new technology that comes along, I don't think anyone should be tied to having a blockchain project. In my opinion, if you're starting the conversation with, we're going to go do something in blockchain, you know, it's definitely a missed opportunity to develop something good that doesn't utilize blockchain. Even putting, you know, it sounds really simple, like write something on a block, you know, in your head, like writing data takes less than a millisecond. On the blockchain, it's actually super intensive. Because they have to write it in a way that's unencryptable, you know, and that's unimmutable and things like that. And that takes processors. I mean, like literally, you know, if when you're looking at like crypto mining, which is not the use case we're talking about right now, like it literally has increased carbon emissions in terms, you know, for the world. It's increased carbon emissions for the world because of how heavy the processing is to mine cryptocurrency. And so blockchain itself is not as heavy as that, but when you think about like the world running on blockchains everywhere, it does become that. And so, you know, it's just not a technology that's heavily scalable at the moment, but it has the purpose is there. And so, you know, if the usage of blockchain over time, I think is gonna definitely adopt itself, but I don't think it's the solution, and it doesn't need to be the solution if there are better ones.
To move the conversation in a little bit of a different direction, but still having an appreciation for privacy consideration, how do you think there is going to be impact? Is there going to be any impact with mobile location and the way that we're able to tie it back to actual business results? As in, is there going to be an impact on attribution in any way?
Specifically dealing with the kind of privacy and kind of flowing that through?
Yeah, and I think I asked the question, in some ways know the answer, that it's the mobile location data is what is going to change, and then it's going to fall down and impact everything the same way, as in how you can target, how you can build an audience, how you can attribute, because it's the location data that's changed. It's not any one of the actual individualized processes.
Right. I'd say for attribution, the effects might be relatively minimal. The measurement piece and the attribution piece, most of it has to be scaled out in some way, shape, or form. So it's a lot of data science work to go from, you know, understanding, because no matter, I don't care who you are at the end of the day, if you're using mobile location data, it's a panel of X users, right? And so nobody has everybody, and the ability to understand anything and everything that's happened is nearly impossible. And so the ability to kind of utilize better statistical models and being able to explain better statistical models with less data or less users exhibiting certain behaviors, I think that is going to change, but I think the actual product and outcome of it is going to be a lot, pretty much the same thing. But it does require people, I think, to be a lot more transparent with how they got there as opposed to the methodology itself. I think the rigor that actually hasn't happened in kind of the mobile location space is most people go, oh, awesome, that methodology sounds great from a data collection perspective. It sounds better than the rest. And then all this middle area of like how they go from 20 visits actually translates to 700 visits because of this, 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 and that, that's still relatively kind of in the dark, I'd say, across the board. And so that piece, I think, will need to be illuminated more as you get less and less data, because you'll have a lot less proof points at the very beginning of the funnel. When it comes down to audiences, though, I think there is huge impact there. You know, the idea of having deterministic or as deterministic data as possible to be the seed into a probabilistic model for audiences. I don't think we've actually had the point where we didn't have enough data for audiences, because there's just so much RTB data out there. And if that goes away, I think the ability to take that seed file and actually like make it 20 million to 30 million for a Volvo, you know, Volvo audience becomes almost nearly impossible. So I think there will be drastic changes there. And so I'm not sure what the actual impact will be. I mean, like, we could just be a lot more liberal with look-alike modeling and what that looks like. But I do feel like that's going to be a major part of it. And then some of it might require the DSPs or the DMPs or anyone that's building these audiences to start really developing their own look-alike modeling based on the ad serving that they're doing, which is something that data companies typically don't have data on for look-alike modeling in general. So like I said, it's a use case based, and I feel like the changes in privacy won't affect too much of the analytics measurement and things like that, because most of that is a small seed file into a bigger universe, but audiences require scale, and there's just something about not having even bad data in the audience product that would make it a lot harder to scale out.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Clearly, a lot of expectations need to be managed for both brands and for advertisers who are traditionally now accustomed to how mobile location has been working to date. A lot of new implications for us to watch for, and we will continue to see how things shake out both from regulative bodies like the IAB and from mobile location partners like Cubic and others. Lawrence, thanks so much for joining us to discuss the latest and greatest on mobile location and privacy.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot less heated than I thought it would be.
So that's our episode on mobile location and privacy. Thanks to Lawrence Chan, EVP of Data Ecosystems at Cubic, for sharing some of his latest knowledge on privacy and location. An era that demands transparency between consumers and data collectors is one we've all been needing. It's not just for the benefit of consumers, but advertisers as well. With clarity around where and how we're transferring and collecting information, we gain higher quality data in a way that's safer for everyone involved. I'm Noor Nasir, and we'll catch you next time for more AdTech Unfiltered.